Velkommen til Mangfoldsmikrofonen, podcasten som utforsker mangfold og inkludering i perspektiv av å skape konkurransefortrinn for virksomheter. Overordnet diskuteres dette fra et samfunnsperspektiv, men det betydningsfulle mangfold skapes på mikronivå, rundt lunsjbordet, middagsbordet og i styrerommene. Jeg Michelle Chinoppen, og i denne podcasten deler bedrifter erfaringer og diskuterer hvordan de lykkes med mangfold som en del av sin strategi, på tvers av mennesker, merkevarer og partnere.
Founding in 1905, Yara has established a unique position as the industry's only global crop nutrition company. With a mission to responsibly feed the world and protect the planet, they have around 17,500 employees, operations in 60 countries, 26 production plants, with the largest in Porsgrunn, Norway, and over 10,800 outlets, reaching revenues of over $24 billion. My guest today is Cromwell Ellie, Vice President of Global D&I and Talent Management. Cromwell has extensive experience in this field, having worked in several countries and continents. With a Master's in International Business, a Master's in Human Resource Management, and a Bachelor degree in Sociology, he so kindly shares how his own background has influenced how he approaches his work, and how Yara strives to embed diversity and inclusion in all business processes.
Good morning, Cromwell.
Good morning.
And welcome to this rainy, rainy day in Bærum.
Summer day.
Yes, summer day. It's lovely to have you here. And Cromwell, you represent Yara today. Mm-hmm. You are Vice President of Global Diversity, Equity and Inclusion and Talent Management. That's quite a title.
Yeah.
And we're going to go through what that contains. But you have, I mean, this is a podcast that is directed towards Norwegians and Norwegian companies, but we'll still do it in English today.
Yeah.
But you have an extremely interesting background. And I know that you've been in, I mean, you've worked in the government in Australia. You've been in GE Oil and Gas, Aker Solutions, previously Telenor, now Yara. So you have a very, you know, substantial background in the area that we're talking. But I always find it interesting to talk about a person's background first, if that's okay for
you. Sure, absolutely.
Would you be so kind to share a little bit about your background?
Yeah, born and raised in India, in Mumbai, a crowded city, 20 million people, and now I'm here, you know, looking outside your window here in sunny Norway, population of only 500,000. But born and raised in India, and spent, you know, my teenage, you know, life. I did my undergrad in India as well. Studied sociology and did not really know what I wanted to do, so I got into sales accidentally and don't think I did very well in there. And I really have a lot of connection to India because of who I am, you know, born and raised there, you know, everything, you know, my roots are Indian. But over 20 years ago, 22 years ago, I decided to move to Australia. My family moved there many years ago. You know, I had uncles and aunts living in Australia, you know, probably there for like 50 plus years. I was the last one to move to Australia. Lived there for, 10 years or so. Studied there, did my postgrad there. Met my wife. She's Norwegian. I met her in Australia.
There's always an explanation.
There's always, you know, someone told me I'm a love immigrant.
Yep.
So that's what I am.
That's how it is.
But before coming to Norway, my wife and I was fortunate. You mentioned GE. My wife and I moved to Shanghai, China. We lived there for a year as an expat. That was an amazing experience. You know, I never thought I would live in China. Following China, I lived in Italy, in Florence, for about a year or a little over a year. That was my first taste of Europe. Since we were so close to Norway, then my wife really didn't want to move back, you know, to Asia Pacific. Then she really wanted to move back to Norway. I must have done something right. You know, I got a transfer approved through GE, and then I moved to Norway.
Oh, yeah, so you started in GE in Norway.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, so I got a transfer. So I've been here for 10 years. I have two children now, two daughters, beautiful girls, 10 and 7 years old. And yeah, now I think I'm part of society, and I'm, you know, I really like being here.
But it must be quite a transition, as you say, to Norway.
Yeah. Yeah, I think every destination or every phase, like, you know, whether it was India to Australia to China to Italy and now Norway, everything was new. Everything was, it's a massive learning, you know, massive cultural experience. Really takes you out of your comfort zone if, you know, people haven't traveled. Holidays is one thing, but when you actually have a postcode, you know, when your letters actually come home, and I'm talking about letters, then you're actually part of, you know, the culture there. Yeah. You learn so much. There are things that you can learn from books and, you know, through other people, but once you're living in the country, you learn so much. Yeah. There are a lot of challenges that come with all, you know, with the fun stuff as well, and there were many, many days of frustration and, you know, what am I doing here? And being different, you know, in terms of ethnicity in all these different countries, also comes with challenges, but also, you know, like my wife always says, you know, my difference is my uniqueness, yeah. Right? So, so it's been a fun ride, yeah. You know, so far, yeah, overall.
And now you are in Yara.
Yeah.
And can you tell me a little bit about, I mean, with a title like that,
yeah.
What do you actually do?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out myself. So, within my sort of scope of responsibilities, there are two areas. One is DEI, so diversity, equity and inclusion. So, you know, really trying to make sure that Yara as an organization, we become a lot more inclusive. You know, we have, you know, the right programs, the right practices, you know, hiring practices, development opportunities for people, you know, with all the different backgrounds. So no matter who you are, we want to make sure that, you know, Yara is a place for fairness, for the right opportunities, irrespective of ethnicity or age or, you know, personal, you know, preferences, orientation or, you know, disabilities, etc. So that is, you know, I feel it's a big responsibility, but fortunately I work in an organization where we take this very seriously. You know, we have commitments, we've made public commitments, so we're really trying to work towards those. A leadership team that has DEI, you know, on their scorecard, you know, so if they don't achieve, certain targets that we've been working towards, that affects the overall scorecard and the performance of them and the organization. So when it's taken seriously, it makes the job a lot easier. But this is a very difficult area to work in. It's very rewarding because, you know, every person's life or employment, you know, if you make a difference, then, you know, you can go home smiling. Mm. But, you know, next day is another day, you know. Yeah. So
that's true, yeah.
So DEI is, you know, it's a massive topic. So that's one of the things that I focus on. And then the other one is talent management. So it's about how we manage and manage is probably not the best word. So maybe my title needs to be changed. But how we're focusing on employees' development with the right opportunities and, you know, learning and performance management. How we manage performance in the organization. So making sure that every employee has, you know, the right conversations with their leaders and vice versa. You know, they're getting the right feedback on how well they're doing and how well they should develop. And so that's performance management, but also succession planning throughout the organization. So establishing a framework and, you know, helping set some guidelines on, you know, what is succession planning? How do we identify people who could, you know, take on different roles? And I mean succession planning, not just moving up the ladder, because that's, you know, probably a very traditional way of looking at succession planning, but succession planning in terms of opportunities, in terms of more complexity, in terms of a different project, in terms of new assignments, and even, you know, promotions moving upwards in the traditional sense.
Yeah.
So these are the areas I work with.
And I mean, I read a lot about Yara the last few days, and every time I sit down and just nudge into a company really well. There's so much you didn't know, you know. And Yara being, and I quote what says on the, you know, a provider of environmental and agricultural solutions and a global crop nutrition company. I wasn't actually aware of the start of the company and that it goes that far back as 1905, you know, addressing famine in Europe at the time and still doing that. So they have like really an amazing vision. You don't really think about that, you know, you just think in the Norwegian term, kunstgjødsel, you know, it's just kind of just sounds artificial. And maybe they should change the name of the product. And but then I looked into the key factors of, you know, 17,500 employees, 60 countries, 140 countries with sales, 26 production plants. And that's when you start realizing the impact. Mm. And then you start realizing the impact of people, you know. So, and that's when I started getting into your strategic priorities and then, you know, your new commitments. And that's when it started to get interesting. You know, you have the numbers. Could you just take us a little bit through the journey that you've had? Because obviously this is not what you were working on just 5, 6, 7 years ago. This must have been a shift here.
Yeah. In terms of DEI?
Yeah, in terms of DEI and, you know, how you work and how you address that issue in Yara.
Yeah. Yara has been working on, you know, the DEI initiatives, I think, since 2015. Like, you know,
that long.
So they've been doing stuff, you know, before that, but we've been really started to take it, you know, seriously since 2015. So, you know, with the focus on gender. And then, you know, we gradually brought in the agenda. And this has been, it's been a tough journey, but a very rewarding journey because, you know, DEI, it's quite new for a lot of people. For some people, it comes very naturally, you know, to be a very inclusive leader or inclusive team. But, you know, 2015 may seem like a long time, but I don't think it's long enough. And, you know, we still have a long way forward. We started off only with gender, like I said, but now we focus on a number of things. You know, we can work on a lot of things, but the few things that we try to focus deeply on is gender, ethnicity. Also trying to, you know, do you know, a lot of work, you know, for the LGBTQ plus community and people with disabilities. So these are the four, amongst many, four international days, you know, that we celebrate. And we also try to make sure that we are changing, you know, practices in the organization, changing thinking in the organization, at least around these areas to start with. It doesn't mean that we are not focusing on other areas, but these are the main areas.
And that is that mainly when you focus on those areas, is that a lot of leadership training that's involved in that?
It's leadership training is one thing, but also really trying to encourage more allies, you know, to come forward in the organization. That is not only for leaders, but every individual can be an ally, you know, to, you know, a certain group. Excuse me. So individual training, we are also, you know, want our talent acquisition or recruiters to be trained on, you know, how we can broaden our scope of applicants, you know, address conscious, unconscious biases that we may have in the recruitment process. So it's training beyond leadership. So really DEI is for everyone. Leaders play a super active a role in this area, but it goes beyond leadership as well.
What's interesting is that the recruitment part, you know, so I was reading that you said that there will be max 60% of any gender in the top three management levels by 2030. That's interesting. And that you have certain, if I can find it, that your recruitment policies are very much based on what you're saying, but do you have any, I mean, is that something that's recent or has that existed in Yara for quite a long time, or is it something that you kind of embedded or, you know, in how you're working?
I would love to take the credit for you know, everything over here, but some of these commitments to have targets for senior leadership was, I think, a couple of years before I started. So I've been with Yara, today makes 2 years, actually.
Okay, very good.
So these targets were there before.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my responsibilities along with the broader DEI network is to strengthen that. So we need to strengthen the pipeline in order for us to, you know, achieve those targets. So we have, when it comes to the top leadership, our CEO and his direct reports, we're 50% women today.
Mm.
And we're also looking at the extended leadership team, the senior leadership team. We are really hoping to strengthen our diversity representation there as well.
And for companies that are listening to this, because it's, you know, I attended this panel and somebody asked me, is this, you know, do we need to have the discussion any longer about why we're doing this? And I try to say, but wait a minute, the large Norwegian companies might understand why, and the city centre Oslo-based companies might understand why, but there's still a lot of smaller companies in Norway that are still asking themselves, why should we be working with this? So is that something you can address, you know, why are Yara working with this in such to this extent?
I think we always need to be reminded of the why, you know, in my view. Why does Yara do this? One, it's the right thing to do, but it's also good for business. We know that diverse teams, you know, brings in a lot more perspectives, brings in a lot more innovation, brings in, business, revenue increases. There's a lot of McKinsey and, you know, the bigger research firms that, you know, have done a lot of studies in this area. So although many of us who sort of live, you know, in this kind of work that we do, we know the why, but like you said, it's like the broader population probably doesn't, they don't realize, you know, the why. If you look at some of the Norwegian organization, or maybe more than some, if you look at the executive teams or even the management teams, it won't be as diverse as you would want it to be. In fact, to put it bluntly, it's not diverse at all. Right, so it'll be very Norwegian, you know, male-focused, you know, management teams. I visited, someone's organization who was taking me, you know, for a tour. The office is in Oslo, and then we went to the canteen. The canteen was on the topmost floor, and there was no elevator there. So the first thing I said is, what about people, who are on wheelchairs or have difficulties walking, And the person said, oh, I didn't realize that.
No.
So, you know, there are a lot of things that people don't realize, you know, in organizations. So we need to remind them of the why.
Yeah.
So I feel start with the why, and that, you know, helps you get there.
Does that mean that you have, because what, when we spoke previously, what I thought was interesting was that you said that this is kind of embedded into all people processes in Yara.
You're working towards that.
You're working towards it. Okay, so it's not quite there.
You're not
perfect yet.
Not yet. And I think if we're perfect, then either we don't have good targets, or we're lying. So I think...
I love honesty.
So we're not perfect, far from perfect, but, you know, we're doing a lot. And I think, we keep trying to do a lot more than, you know, we did the previous year.
Yeah.
So when it came to our senior leadership positions, you know, we have a target that we're trying to achieve for 2025 to be 40% women in, senior leadership positions.
Yeah.
Right. So, and we changed the target as well a couple of years ago. So we know that, we need to keep stretching ourselves.
Yeah.
So.
And that means that, you know, you have the mandate and you have the resources.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I've kind of criticized and wondered if this should be a HR thing alone, because sometimes the HR don't have budgets or focuses or KPIs or anything in that area. But in your sense, it's different.
We have the support from, you know, senior leaders. We, like every organization, we do our business planning, you know, for... the following year, we do that in like Q3, Q4. Mm-hmm. We plan for what we would like to do. And, you know, fortunately, in the last couple of years, at least since I've been here, and I know it's happened in the past, we've got good support, you know, to drive and lead initiatives.
Yeah, so from top management.
From top management, and, you know, including funding. And this year, you know, we were one of the sponsors for Oslo Pride. Right. And, you know, that was not something that we spoke about last year during the business planning, or at least some of these discussions didn't happen, you know, with me and some of my close colleagues. Somebody else said, you know, what about Oslo Pride? And then we all jumped, said yes.
Yeah.
We got the additional funding, and, you know, and yeah, we get the support as well. You know, Svintura, our CEO, was right behind this. Sulva Helvas, our CHRO, she does a lot more than HR, but, you know, just in common language, head of HR and digital, she's behind this. And, you know, so we have very good support.
We had a little bit of a discussion, which I find is interesting, because, again, I hear a lot of Norwegian companies talking about their efforts within this area. And what kind of frustrates me a little bit is how even large companies in Norway will say that this is so difficult, that it kind of really emphasize on it's extremely difficult, it's so difficult. And I kind of go, really, you know, is it, are people that are different difficult, you know? What's your take on that? Because do you agree? Do you think it's very difficult?
I think it depends on the intentions. If you have the right intention, then if you're serious about this, then you can make good, you know, progress. Right, but it is a difficult area in the sense that, you know, there'll be a lot of people, and I like to put it in this way, you know, there are some people who are completely on board, you know, so they'll be your best allies and your best ambassadors. Some you'll need to convert because, you know, just lack of knowledge and understanding, and some will just not believe in it, right? So focus on the first two groups.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think you have, you know, quicker wins with them. Try, you know, sometimes I find it very difficult to convert absolutely everyone, who people who are against it. So focus on the ones who have, you know, the right intentions, who want to do this, and I think the others will follow. So yes, I can understand why it's difficult for some people, but if you have a good group of people to start and, you know, get a little bit of traction, then you'll see the interest growing. But it is a very difficult sort of, you know, topic for some organizations, I can understand, very traditional organization.
Yeah, so do you think it's more directed towards, not necessarily that it's so difficult, but it's more difficult for them?
Yeah, I think it's for some organizations that, you know, I won't name many organizations, but, you know, at least one of the big consultancy firms has, you know, been engaged in DEI work since 1998. Right, so you talk to some of their employees now, you know, the language is, you know, it comes very natural to them. You know, this just becomes, this is almost part of their DNA.
Yeah.
For some organizations of just getting on board, it's going to be very difficult for them because it's all new. Right? But like anything that's new, it's going to be a little bit difficult.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so it's more a maturity process.
It's a maturity process, and I think that's the right word to use. You will see, you know, there are some different maturity models when it comes to DEI and where your organization fits. So I like the word maturity. So if you see where Yara is compared to some others, maybe we are higher.
Yeah.
But maybe we are a little bit lower than some others who've been in this, you know, in this work or in the space for many, many years before us. Right. So,
do you think your maturity is based on your background? I mean, because there is also, I mean, you don't have to have a multi-ethnic background to work with HR and diversity and inclusion. But would you say that, you know, you did say it's your superpower, but would you say that it influences the way that you kind of approach this kind of work?
I think so. I think it has a big, you know, role to play. Me being different, like I said, I was, you know, I always felt different in every single country that I lived in. So maybe I see things from a very different lens. Even growing up in India, not that I felt very different there, you know, had a great childhood, you know, never saw, you know, any challenges there. Or if I did, maybe I was just too focused on, you know, playing and having fun. But I've had very good role models right from, you know, the day I was born. Like my, you know, my grandmother, my mum's mum, she's been a massive role model for the whole family, right? And how she embraced, you know, and some of the values that she, you know, taught her kids and, you know, taught us as grandkids. You know, she took care of, you know, the family on her own. Of course, my grandfather was working as well. You know, my grandfather and grandmother fostered, you know, two girls, you know, at that time, teenagers, not having much money. So the role modeling was there always. Followed, you know, that followed through, you know, with my parents and the extended family. So it's always been there in me. But then I started to feel it and experience once I started to grow up and move out and being different in Australia, but also, you know, being really welcomed in Australia. China was, I was an absolute foreigner. I really felt that because of the language, because, you know, of how I look and absolute different culture. So
did you ever understand it in the same way? Because, I mean, Australian culture is easy to kind of float into. The Chinese culture, was that, were you always on the outside there? Or?
Always. I had some really nice colleagues who tried to, you know, get me in. But that was more about so that I don't feel alone. But it's quite difficult to understand and, you know, really, you know, sort of get in. Right, to learn a lot. But, you know, learning as an outsider, there's a lot of learning in itself. Right? So it's really, I think 1 year was, you know, a massive learning, but I think you've got to live there a lot longer to embrace everything.
And then you've lived in Italy.
Then in Italy. Yeah. So.
And are Norwegians then, are they easier to kind of float into and understand?
I think it, at the start, it like any new country, like, you know, you're also, you know, as someone new to the country, you're a little bit reserved, you know, you're taking everything in, you know, before you start to, you know, step out and engage and embrace other, you know, others and, you know, the culture. So it was a little bit hard at the start. After I've had, you know, kids of my own, getting to know other families, you know, making a lot more friends, then it started to get a lot easier. But I still see, you know, a lot of differences, you know, from my background and, you know, how, you know, the local culture here is as well.
Yeah. And there is local culture.
There is.
You know, I mean, my husband's from the north and even the cultural differences there are huge. I jumped a bit past over Italy. What's the differences there then? I mean, because...
You know what's right? I absolutely loved every single day in Italy. It comes with its, you know, challenges as well. But some of the things that are very common to India, it's everything revolves around food, family, and your grandmother.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the boss of the family. So... I, you know, I love my food. I'm a big foodie, so, you know, couldn't get you know, a better place than Italy. No, you know, to enjoy all that. Well,
yeah, my family, we say that we were Italians in a previous life because of the food. It kind of takes me to working with D&I in Norway. How is that in any way different since you've worked abroad for so much? How is that different than other countries when you're working from a corporate level?
I find Norway a lot more understanding and a lot more mature than some of the other countries, you know, I've experienced.
That's interesting.
For example, in India and China, you know, some of the organizations, so I wouldn't want to generalize, but some of the things that I've experienced or heard of or, you know, learned about is traditional thinking, right? You know, DEI, it's, maybe it's understood, but not taken seriously as much as Norway, you know, takes it. Norway is quite advanced in many ways. You see, you know, politicians talking about it. You see, you know, executives talking about it. Families probably talk about it as well. I know these, you know, this is a good discussion. My wife and I, who's, you know, Norwegian, you know, we have some really good conversations about DEI at home as well. I didn't experience, you know, so much of DEI kind of conversations in my previous organizations in, you know, in China or India or maybe even Australia to that for that matter. But, you know, as I reflect on that question, I'm just thinking maybe DEI has, you know, got so much of good traction in the last 10 or 15 years. Maybe, and I'm seeing it so much now, maybe I'm a little bit biased towards towards Norway. So I don't want to be harsh, you know, on India or China or any other, you know, countries that, that's my perception. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
What is it that you feel Yara does, or what do they do that you're kind of, that you've nailed it in a way? You know, I mean, do you have some successes that you could mention? And then if you have some like learnings that you think you could have done better, is there anything you can share with us there?
Yeah, I would say we are trying to nail it, or we are nailing it, not fully nailed it yet. But I think if you don't have serious commitment and support from your, you know, from your executive team or senior leaders, it's going to be very difficult. Right? So, and we have that, and we take that seriously. I'll give you a couple of examples here. Besides all the policies and, you know, the practices that we're trying to, you know, work and make stronger. Every year we have a senior leader summit where you'll have about 250 or 300 leaders coming together 2.5-3 days, you know, talking about business, talking about, you know, the strategy, talking about, you know, priorities for next year and the future. It was, I think, just before COVID when we had the physical gathering. We had, I think it was only about 22 or 23% women participating in these executive or the senior leader summit. Last year, we decided we need, you know, work on this, take it a lot more seriously than we have. And we had 36% women from 23% with the you know, from the previous physical gathering to 36%. Yeah,
that's quite a big growth. Yeah.
That's a massive.
Mm.
So, to get to, you know, it's of course, you know, the number should be higher, but even to get from 23 to 36%, it takes some level of seriousness and commitment and difficult conversations with some people who wouldn't be invited.
I see. Yeah. So including more people in the discussion.
Including, yeah. Mm. So that's just one example of, you know, the support and the seriousness, you know. So, you know, we can have really good policies and practices on, policies and, you know, guidelines on paper. But if you don't really practice and believe in what you're doing, you know, we're not going to be working towards those, you know, targets.
Mm. Mm.
So this is just one concrete example of, you know, where we have, you know, taken it, you know, seriously.
Mm.
Just one example. Mm. Every year, or sometimes I think the year before it was twice a year, but normally at least once a year, I present, you know, how we're doing with our succession planning and, you know, the pipeline for senior leaders to the executive team, right? And good discussions, you know, there's always a pressure to do a lot more. Basically, the point I'm trying to make is the executive team wants to know the progress, and it's not just you know, lip service, but, you know, following up on, you know, how we're doing in this area as well. So just a couple of examples.
Yeah, and I understood you even have an ethics. I mean, you have your code of conduct, of course, and you even have an ethics hotline.
Yeah,
and that has been necessary, or.
I think it's...
Because it's a large organization.
It is a large organization. And, you know, in some cultures, sometimes it's very difficult to have conversations upwards, you know, to express, you know, how you feel, or, you know, if you spot something that maybe you're not comfortable with, or you may think this is not going according to how it should be. Not everyone may feel comfortable to have that conversation with the leaders or, you know, the people in charge of compliance or, you know... safety or whatever the topic may be. So I think having these hotlines, it helps. And, you know, as far as I know, I'm not an expert in this area, but I know enough to say that it's an anonymous hotline.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, it's facilitated by a third party.
Right.
So, but I think it's important to have, you know, ways where employees can express, you know, how they feel, if there are any challenges, you know, in the organization.
Yeah. What I thought was interesting, because I when I talk to companies, you know, I always try to say that D&I shouldn't be a sidekick, you know. it's when it's that sidekick that it kind of also gets striked off the board the minute there's something that they need to deprioritize. And I understand that you have in IATA very strategic priorities where the culture of entrepreneurship and diversity is a part of accelerating operational efficiency. I thought that was quite interesting that there was that red line all the way there. What is it that you feel in that context that IATA could do better?
I think we have certain targets and certain priorities that we've already laid. I think it's just to make sure that we're following up on the priorities that we have set. I think if you don't have good if you don't have some routines on following up, I think things will slip through the cracks. Setting targets is one thing, but we need to make sure that we continuously accountability. Have accountability and following up and holding people accountable, for all the different, targets, and expectations.
Yeah.
Right. So, and we don't want to look at DEI as, as a separate function or an organization. A conscious decision was made a year and a half ago when I joined IATA 2 years ago. I only had talent management, as my area of responsibility. 6 months later, when there was an opportunity to do some restructuring and really think about DEI and other things, it was decided that DEI and talent should be together. Yeah. Under one roof, because it's not like a cousin coming to the party, but hey, let's do this. But really trying to embed DEI into the policies and the practices that we have that's connected to the employee life cycle. And we're still working towards that.
Yeah.
But just coming to your point, it shouldn't be a separate like a cousin or it's like a separate unit.
Yeah.
DEI should be embedded in everything and not just in the people processes. But in other business processes, like some organizations even look at the supply chain, the vendors or the suppliers.
Interesting.
How diverse are you? Do you really practice what you preach? And then they select vendors based on that. So
okay, that's taking it one step further.
Step further.
That's interesting. So that's something that IATA works on.
I should know this a lot better than than my response, but yes.
I did read a little bit about it.
We're working towards that.
I think before we finalize here, is there anything that you're thinking? What's your wish list for IATA? What's something that you're saying? This is what I really want to focus on the next year, or leave your mark in a way.
I think the four areas that we concentrate now on, like I mentioned, gender, and that's very close to me because I just touched a little bit on my grandmother and my two daughters, really want to be a good role model for them as well. So that area comes quite naturally to me to focus on that area. We focus on people with we focus on the LGBTQ+ agenda, ethnicity, but I think a lot of organizations, including IATA, I think we need to focus a lot more on people with disabilities. And I don't only talk about disabilities as in the physical disabilities, but neurodiversity and all the other areas under this umbrella. I think if we could pay a lot more attention in this area, I think that'll be taking it to the next step.
That's interesting, because I've spoken to a lot of people about it, but it is an area where probably need more focus. And if we could have one last piece of advice from you, because you have that experience that you have, what would you say would be a good starting point for a lot of Norwegian companies? Are it still at a starting point?
I think we need to really learn from each other. And in this area, there are no competitors, right? You may be competing on your services and your products, but when it comes to DEI, we need to talk to each other, learn from each other. I'm part of a network where, I know that it's like larger organizations, but we don't see each other as a threat when it comes to this.
No.
We share best practices. We talk to each other. How are you starting that? In IATA, this year we've launched employee resource groups, So, you know, people can be part of these groups. It's a voluntary sort of opportunity to be part of a group where you see people with, you know, similar background or challenges, and you learn, support each other. So we recently launched this group. But I reached out to some of my, you know, colleagues from other organizations, or network from other organizations. How did you set this up?
Mm.
You know, I'm new. I don't know how to be setting it up. I don't know how to write, some of the procedures. And I got a lot of material from them, right? From some of the bigger banks, you know, oil and gas companies. And then I do the same. Mm. So I think whether you're a small organization, a big organization, just reach out to someone who started.
Mm.
And then, you know, just move on, yeah. You know, just take that first step.
Yeah.
And, you know, some days it'll feel like you're swimming against the tide. Keep swimming, it'll only build muscle, and then, you know, you'll keep moving forward. So take the first step.
Yeah. I think that was a brilliant end of our conversation.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing today, and I look forward to having more conversations with you. Thank you.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle.
Takk for at du lytter. Del gjerne så verdifull erfaring og praksis kan nå andre som i ferd med å navigere seg innen dette området. Hvis du ønsker å starte prosessen i egen organisasjon eller ta eksisterende arbeid videre, ta gjerne kontakt. Kontaktinfo finner du i podcastbeskrivelsen. Det kun ved å delta aktivt på samtalen at du kan være med på å drive positive endringer, uansett hva mangfold betyr for deg og din organisasjon. Det kun ved å dele at vi aktivt kan gjøre hverandre gode og gjøre læringskurven brattere. Jeg ønsker å etterlate positive fotspor.